is an interview conducted with Terry Lemon on March 19th, 2005 in La Grande, Oregon.
And this is my final sound check. Let's begin, Mr. Lemon. Could you tell me your full name, please, and your date of birth and where you were born, basic information like that?
Terry Lee Lemon, born March 5th, 1945 in Walla Walla, Washington.
And what brought you to La Grande? How did it come to be that you came to La Grande, you or your family?
We moved here in February of 1947, and I was 2 years old at the time, or soon to be two, being the next month. My father, along with a partner, purchased the Globe Furniture Company, and we moved here. Because of that, they opened first part of that year, and we left Walla Walla, came here, rented a couple of homes, and ended up living in about 1949 at 1101 11th Street.
Before we go any further, do you remember the name of your father's business partner at Globe?
Oh, very well. His name was Averett Hickox.
Okay. And then, where did you live after 1101 11th Street?
Well, we lived, I grew up in that neighborhood, lived in that neighborhood from about 49 until I was married in 1966.
So you said that you lived in this house until 1966.
Right. I was married in 1966, and we didn't live in that house. We lived at two different addresses, a block apart in that neighborhood, 1101 11th and 1001 11th, and moved to 1001 11th in 1955. Block down the street, and then lived there until 1968, and then my parents moved from there lived there until 66, and my parents moved from there in 1968 to Island City, where they lived until they were both deceased.
Tell me about that neighborhood, living in that neighborhood, the kinds of things that you did there, and about the lot itself.
Well, it was a neighborhood full of a lot of kids, and we were all kind of about the same age, and it looks different today than it did then. Across the street from 1101 11th, there was a huge vacant lot, and that vacant lot was just a rough lot, but it was a neighborhood baseball diamond, and we had holes dug all over that and tunnels dug to play all sorts of fun games like Army and War and Cowboys and Indians. And there was a big old frame wire backstop on the corner of L and 11th that was the back of the baseball diamond. And it was kind of a one of our neighborhood projects there. And I was probably, I don't know, 7 or 8 years old. There was a little neighborhood grocery store a block away that an older man owned. He seemed really ancient to us. He probably wasn't that old. But we all went over there to buy candy all the time, and he was always giving us a hard time in the grocery store. And so we sort of decided he was kind of a mean old man, and we'd kind of like to do something to him. And he had the habit of driving his car across that vacant lot to get from one side to the other as a shortcut. And so we all decided, we all being about probably 15 of us, that we'd dig a hole deep enough out in the middle of that lot for his car to drive into. And so we dug and dug, and that hole got to be so deep that we had to stand on each other's shoulders to get out of it. And it was about 6 or 7 feet wide and probably 5 or 6 feet deep. And then we decided it would be a good idea, if we really wanted to get him, we'd fill it full of water. So we worked on that, and we couldn't find enough neighborhood hose to get out to fill the hole up. So we scratched that idea and decided we'd just cover with limbs and grass and maybe drive his car in it. Well, that was pretty successful because it wasn't more than a day or so later that he was traveling across that shortcut and he drove his car in there and he didn't drop his wheels and he dropped the whole car in, nose down, and he had to get a wrecker down there to lift the car out of the hole. And I thought, boy, we're really going to get in trouble for that. But most of our parents sort of saw the humor in that, and we never noticed that we got in trouble for that. But anyway, we all felt like that we kind of got the mean old guy at the grocery store that gave us a hard time when we went in to buy candy.
Did that ever change him?
Didn't change him. He just got a little more ornery and gave us a little harder time. I think he knew who the guilty people were. But anyway, in about 1955, that property is all full of red brick duplexes, and there's probably about nine there now or so, eight or nine, and that filled that whole lot. Of course, that was a pretty unpopular thing with the neighborhood gang because we lost a baseball diamond, and we lost our play area, and we lost the big hole we could drop a car into, and a few important things like that. So that is today the way it was when it was built. Those properties are still there, and those duplexes are still there. And
who were some of your neighborhood friends that made up this gang of 15 you're talking about?
Well, one lady still lives there. Her husband's deceased, and her kids are growing and gone, Nellie Thomas still lives there, and she lives at, I don't recall her address, she's on the corner of 11th and K, and she's lived there probably 40 years, I imagine. There's another fellow that lives down partway down the street in the house that he lived in as a child and then moved away, and then his grandparents lived there, and then he came back and lives there now, and his name's Alden Prescott. And Alden still resides in McGrann and still works here. And he lived next door to where we lived at 1111, so his address would have been 1011th, and his would have been 1311. And he lives there today.
And he was one of the kids.
One of the kids gang members of the 6-year-old crew that lived down there.
The 11th Street Gang.
The 11th Street Gang. Right.
Tell me about this. You had talked about a Mrs. Mullen.
Mrs. Mullins lived across the street, kind of diagonally across the street from where we lived at 1101 11th, and she was a lady that was from Ireland, and she was a kind of a little old gray-haired lady, really feisty, and had a real heavy Irish accent, and that house is still there. It's a large two-story, and a man by the name of Jim Huber, who was here in LeGrand for years and years as a county extension agent, he lived there for a long time after Mrs. Mullins lived there. But Mrs. Mullins was there, and she owned about half of that block that's still part of it, still mostly vacant. There's been a home built on the other side of it, and then there's a home over on 12th Street that owns part of that. But that was another place where the neighborhood crew used to like to play, and again, we were sort of looking for something to do one day, and she had a lot of old fruit trees over there, and we picked the fruit off of one. I'm going to say it's an apple tree because I don't think we knew George Washington then to chop down the cherry tree. But we got all the fruit off the bottom part of the tree and we couldn't get to the top. So as we had the tree mostly cut down and it was starting to tip towards the ground, she caught us. And in her Irish brogue, she was just really thrashing us verbally. She just really gave us a... cursed and screamed at us, and anyway, we all ran off, and again, we got away with what we did. Unfortunately, we probably should have got caught, but anyway, she was a great lady and an interesting person and fun to talk to because of her really heavy Irish accent.
And she was a neighbor also.
She was a neighbor, and she's been deceased for many, many years. And
let's talk about school. Where did you first go to school?
Well, being in that neighborhood, Ackerman Grade School was just right up the hill because that was on the back side of the college. I went to Ackerman, started in the first grade in 1951, and went through the sixth grade there. At the time, that was a lab school for the college, and it was, you know, all the years it was used as grade school, but I remember one year in the grade school, we had 24 student teachers one year in our classroom. Interesting place to go to school.
Yeah, tell me, how did that work?
Well, I think they drew lots, and with every lesson that was taught, we had someone different every lesson. And they just take turns. They all sat at the back of the room, and we had 24. There'd been six a quarter, and every day they tried all teach every day, and every lesson we had someone different. Must have been really easy on the main teacher in the classroom. She had a lot of help teaching.
Would you, would these teachers reappear from day to day?
Well, they would. Yeah, we had the same ones all term.
So.
And then we'd have six more the next term.
How much actual teaching did your actual teacher do?
Well, I really don't remember. She did some, but I would say less than probably half the time she was teaching. Because that school was really the lab school. And I think remembering back, and what I know now, that the college didn't send teachers out as much to other schools as they do now. They really relied on the Ackerman Lab School as a student teaching school.
And you went there through the sixth grade?
Through the sixth grade.
Tell me about your principal.
Well, the principal was Miller. I don't recall his first name. When I first started in the first grade, I didn't really think I should be there, and so I got pretty good at not going to school. I played hooky a lot, and I always got caught. I wasn't really good at it. They'd figure out that I wasn't there, and pretty soon they'd find me somewhere. And so the principal and I got to be on a really familiar basis with each other. He was Mr. Miller, sir, and I was blankety blank. Little lemon kid.
What would typically happen when they would find you? Where would you go?
Well, I just kind of hang out in the neighborhood. I was in the first grade, so there was kids there, neighborhood kids that weren't in school yet, so I'd stay with them and we'd kind of play and do what we normally did, you know, just outside, just kind of being in the neighborhood. And that was mostly in the first grade, and the first grade teacher, her and I got on a pretty familiar basis, too. I got spanked I don't know how many times in the first grade.
Do you remember her name?
Mrs. Darby. I did very well.
Who would catch you?
Oh, usually they'd call home, and my mother would find me out somewhere. Or they'd call home and report in that Terry wasn't there, and after a while they thought that probably my parents ought to know every time I wasn't there, not thinking maybe I was homesick or something legitimate, so they'd be out looking for me, and I usually wasn't too hard to find.
Usually your parents would catch up with you?
Yeah, and I wasn't real good at it.
Well, where did you go to school next?
Well, I went to the middle school, the Grand Junior High School. It's a middle school now, but junior high school, and that was a three-year junior high, 7th, 8th, and 9th. And that would have been from 57 to 1960, and then went to high school at the Grand High School from 61 until graduated in 63.
Any highlights from your junior high years, sports, activities, anything that stands out from that time period?
Not really, I guess. I was in track for a couple of years, ran, that's what I did in track, ran a mile and some relays.
This was in junior high?
In junior high, mm-hmm. Yeah. Played in the band, played the trombone, started in the seventh grade, and was in the orchestra and the symphonic band. And always enjoyed music, and I took piano lessons from the first grade for about 12 years, actually.
Let's talk about that before we move on. Who did you study piano with?
Mildred Van Blocklin. And Mildred is still here, and I think she still teaches piano. Mildred's in her early 90s, or mid-90s, maybe. But I took lessons from her for 9 years, beginning in the first grade. And mostly classical music. And then I got interested in more popular music, and in the seventh grade there was a group of us that formed a dance band, and we had a five-piece band called the Blue Notes, and one of the fellows in the band lived down in the neighborhood on 11th Street, and his name was Scott Wheeler, and his father was an engineer on the railroad, but he was also a very talented musician and played saxophone and also had a dance band of his own. And so he squired us five fledgling musicians into a little bit of a dance band, and he had music for us and orchestrated music and helped us and spent lots of time working with us, and that was in the seventh grade. And we were able to play some. We played for some school dances and just kind of on a very limited basis. But
did you get paid for this at that time?
You know, I think we did a few times, and it was big pay. I think our highlight was maybe $10 a piece, a dance, or a
But that could be a engagement. Significant sum of money at that time.
Well, it was, yeah.
Was it?
Yeah, yeah. And went on from that. After that, I became acquainted with, there was a band in college, and I was in going into high school at the time, and there was a band in college that was needing a piano player. And somehow they knew about me, and I auditioned for them, and they hired me to play piano in their band. And these fellows were all several years older than me, and were all in college at Eastern. And I was with them for about 4 years. And we traveled around mostly northeastern Oregon, probably down to as far as John Day, played quite a bit there, played a lot in Wallowa County, played public dances, a lot of high school proms, winter formals, played a lot at the college. In those days, there was lots of kind of formal type dances at the college. And that would have been in the early 60s when we were playing, and so that was kind of the rock and roll era, but we still played a lot of old standards and, you know, Glenn Miller type music. Not a lot of hard rock and roll. Some, but mostly kind of old standards, things you'd dance to at a formal dance.
What was the name of that band?
The Tone Dusters.
Do you remember any of the other members of the band? What were some of their names?
Well, Bob Patterson was the leader, and Bob was from Baker. And a trumpet player by the name of Lee Payne. Lee was from Baker. We had a bass player. Well, our drum player was Bill Peacock, and Bill is a local fellow. Went all through school here and owned Peacock Lumber Company. His family had Peacock Lumber Company at Alisal, and they closed just a few years ago. But Bill's still in the area, I believe. Another fellow that was a local man was Alan Mosier, and he played a bass guitar. He's not here any longer, but he grew up here on the Grand and went to college here. And we had another drum player when Bill wasn't able to play, and her name was Sherry Hilton. Sherry was a student at Eastern, redheaded gal, and nobody thought any a woman could play the drums, but she was just a terrific drum player.
She broke the rules?
She broke the rules and was an excellent musician.
How long was this band together? How long did you play with them?
Well, I played with them 4 years, and there were two gals that played with them before I did, Beth and Ruth Combs, and they were local girls, grew up here. One of them, or both of them, still live here. I remember they both do, one does. And anyway, they sang, and very talented. They both went to Walter School here and went to college here. And one of them had played the piano, and the other one sang, and they weren't able to continue with the band, so that left a spot open for a piano player, and that's where I came in. And played piano, and I wasn't a very good singer, so I didn't try that. But.
So you played in Eastern Oregon, you played at the college for dances and proms and formals. Where else did you play? Where did this band play? You toured a little bit.
Well, we didn't tour a big area, mostly Eastern Oregon. We played in Baker, Ontario, John Day, played a lot in Wallowa County. We played some clubs, in public nightclubs in Wallowa County. Had some regular engagements in Wallowa County a couple of different times through the winter. Just every Saturday night we'd drive up and play for 5 hours, and spend the night and come home or drive back home.
I think you were telling me you had a major engagement with them one winter.
Oh,
in the Gold Room?
Yeah,
can
the
you
Gold
tell
Room.
Me about that?
Yeah, the Gold Room was kind of a cowboy bar.
That was in Joseph?
That was in Joseph, yeah. That was a fun place to play. There was always excitement at the Gold Room. And they had a big dance floor and a big bar, and it was a nice, they had a good restaurant, and it was kind of the place to go in Wallowa County on weekends, and we booked in for every Friday and Saturday night through the winter one year, and there was always something exciting happening in the Gold Room. That's back when Joseph was a cowboy town and not what it's developed into today.
The artsy
culture thing today.
Tell me how it would be to play. Tell me how it would be to be on the road with this band, knowing that you were in high school and there would be such an age disparity. That must have been exciting, but did that present any problems or any escapades as a result
of
that?
No, we were all pretty compatible, and the other guys in the band were all lots of fun. They all had great personalities, and some of them we water skied together with. I knew most of them pretty well before I went to work for them, so things went, you know, really well. They treated me really well. I was just, you know, one of them, and the age disparity didn't seem to be, you know, any kind of an obstacle. We'd each, you know, take, they furnished cars for transportation, and when it came to be my turn, I was, went to my parents. They had a big station wagon. We'd load up instruments, drums and all the stuff, and all of us, and usually we traveled in one vehicle or tried to, and that was in the days when you had big cars and you could do that, either a van or a station wagon or something.
When it was your turn, did you do the driving?
Well, I did, yeah, I drove.
So you were old enough to drive?
Yeah, we went over Dooley Mountain one time, headed to, I think we were going to John Day, and that was before the highway through Sumter was there now. You had to drive over the old Dooley Mountain, and that was a crooked old mountain road that went up over the top and down to Unity and on into John Day, and we were driving over that one time, and I remember going around, it was really slick, and I went around the corner too fast, and we slid broadside all the way around that corner looking down into a canyon of about 500 feet below us. Everybody sort of gasped and hung on, and luckily, I pulled us through, and we made it, but, you know, we drove a lot in the winter, and a few bad roads, a few close calls, but always seemed to get there.
Now, I think you told me about one of your maybe more lucrative engagements at that Gold Room during a New Year's one time. Can you tell me a little about that?
Yeah, at the time, bands were paid, you know, $20-$25 per individual. Usually it was kind of a going rate, so like a five-piece band was typically hired for $100-$150, sometimes $200 a night. And we had a steady engagement at the Gold Room, and they paid us, and there was four of us in. We had four pieces. And they paid us $20 a piece a night, so on a Friday and Saturday night, we each made $40, and that was a great part-time job because we could do that two nights a week on a weekend and make as much as most people made at a part-time job working all week long. And so those guys going to college, it was kind of important for them, and I lived at home, so it wasn't important for me, but it was a great part-time work, plus it was a lot of fun. And,
well, let's compare that if we can. Let's say if you were working, say, a regular job on the weekend or something like that, what would you make instead in a day's time, for example?
Well, it seems to me wages then were, gosh, I don't know. I worked down at the furniture store and was paid $1 an hour at about that same time. And I'm not sure where minimum wage fit into that, but that was $1, $1.50, somewhere in there. So if you'd worked an 8-hour day on Saturday, you could see what you'd make and compared to making $20 for 5 hours work, in the evening.
Quite a bit of difference.
Yeah, there was quite a bit of difference.
Quite a bit. Before we go back and cover high school, you were telling me you studied piano with one other person.
Oh, I did, and it was man's name was Avery Millering, and Avery was what he did. He was a great musician, played the piano and played the organ, and he was pretty well known around the community during that time and for quite a few years. He was a member of the Christian Church and played there a lot. He played dance music around. He was a great musician, but his mainstay, he was assistant. He worked for the school system, and his last job was assistant superintendent of the schools for the LeGrand School District, is what his profession was. But I took lessons from him for 4 years and studied a lot of theory. Avery was, interested, and I was too, in playing popular music. So it completely changed my music style from classical music, which was mostly all sight read, to contemporary style of playing that was more chords and improvisation, creating your own music, and had a good basis of theory to do all that.
Was that an easy transition to make from
well, it was
music
to me
on the printed page to improvisation?
Well, it was for me because I was really interested in it. And we spent a year or so just doing really basic chords, theory, before we did a lot of playing. He was really strong in those areas, and so you just didn't sit down and just play. You knew what you were doing and why you were doing it.
Do you think that he was a good influence then for that? Did that influence help you with your playing then when you were in these bands?
Right. And I'd started playing, well ahead of that with the Blue Notes, and then I'd already started with Avery before I played for the Tone Dusters. And that's what really gave me the basis to play with the Tone Dusters. I'd been taking lessons from Avery for probably a year, a little longer, before the Tone Dusters came along.
Would you work on any of your material in your lesson time with him to develop any of this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Did a lot of that. Yeah. work on things that we were playing, and the Tone Dusters were playing, we'd work on that, and it was, you know, a great help in developing a, you know, a style of playing that really fit that.
Let's go back to high school. Let's go back to talking about high school. You went to...
Went to LeGrand High School, and graduated in 63.
What sort of activities were you involved in at high school? We know you were in the bands and as your part-time work.
Well, I did that. That was probably my strongest part, was music. Snow skied in high school at the time, and maybe they do now, if the high school ran ski buses up to Spout Springs ski area, and that was pretty much every weekend thing through the winter. They had a huge ski club, and everybody went skiing, you know, great times there.
Were you in music organizations in high school?
Well, the bands. They had an orchestra and a marching band. We was in a marching band. We used to march at games and parades, play concerts, band, symphonic band, and then the...
So you were telling us that you played in the pep band.
Pep bands played at most of the games, basketball games. They were always at a basketball game and some of the football games.
Did you win any, or were you given any awards or citations for your music abilities in school? Did they have letters or
No, not really.
Were you involved in any sports in high school?
No, I was in junior high, and then high school came along, and I decided not to do that, be in sports. And
you graduated in 1963.
63, and then before I graduated, in the spring, I joined the Oregon National Guard. And then after graduation, you had an active duty commitment at that time, and so I stayed here that summer and worked like I had previous years. Spent the summer working at Globe Furniture. And
before we cover the military service, I just want to ask. Do you still have involvement with the high school? Do you attend reunions or socialize with any of your classmates today?
Well, mostly through reunions. Yeah, we've had the typical 10, 20 year. We didn't have a 30. We had a 40-year reunion last year.
Have you been to them all?
Been to them all, yeah. And there's still a few, probably several people from that class that are still here in the journal.
Okay, so you, according to what you said, then you enlisted into the National Guard during your last year?
Yeah, spring of my senior year in high school. And that was a time when there was really no military conflicts anywhere. This seemed like it was something that it was good to do, and I was interested in doing it. And
was there a draft at that particular time?
There was a draft at that time, and you could get deferred from the draft for a lot of different reasons. Going to college was one of them.
But you opted to participate,
right? Because eventually, if you weren't married, and that was another deferment. But you know, for most guys, it was something you'd have to face sooner or later, and it seemed like a reasonable choice to join the Guards, and then I could be here. I wanted to go to college, and I could be here to do that, and so it just, you know, seemed a good decision to do that.
And what was the enlistment term at that time?
Well, at the time, you had a basic 8-year term, but part of that could be served on a standby status. and the enlistment times changed with the guards over the years, but it was interesting at that time, when you enlisted, you had an 8-year commitment, and then you had an active duty guard commitment that actually was predicated on the length, time after you'd done your active duty time. So when you joined, a period of time would go by until you could do your active duty training, which then was typically 6 months. But when you were discharged after your 6-month training, then you only had 3 years of active guard time out of the 8 years. So the 8 years started when you enlisted, but your active time you're only obligated for 3 years after your 6-month active duty time.
And this active duty time was your basic training and
basic training, AIT, which is advanced infantry training, is what that stands for, but it involves any type of schooling, not necessarily infantry schooling. And then there was a period of time, depending on the school, that when you graduated from or were through, if the school completed that, then you just worked at whatever your job was you were trained for, your MOS that you were trained for, until
now,
you completed your 6 months.
When you enlisted, you joined a local unit?
What was
the name of that unit?
It was... Well, it was a Sunrise Division, 41st Infantry Division, and I'm battalion escapes me.
I have notes here.
I
think you said that you were with Headquarters Company.
It was Headquarters Company, and LeGrand was the battalion was made up of company other guard units, mostly in Eastern Oregon, Baker, Ontario, Pendleton. There was one or two others, but LeGrand was Headquarters Company for that, and that was a little bit of an advantage because you had more things to do. You could have more job opportunities at the local at LeGrand because it was battalion headquarters.
Where did you attend boot camp?
Went to Fort Ord, California.
And then where did you take your individual training after that?
I spent all 6 months at Fort Ord. And after boot camp, I went. My AIT training was in the Personnel Administration School.
And that was the position you held with the guard when you came back?
Well, I was company clerk, which was part of that. That was part of that training, was company clerk. And I did that. I did that for the 3 years. It was about 3.5 years before I was discharged, or I was in the lucky position of being able to go in and tell the CO that I was going to leave, and I'd already typed up my own discharge papers, and here you are, sign them.
So you were the local Radar O'Reilly of the, team here in LeGrand, and you did spend all of your guard time here in LeGrand.
I did.
What was your range of rank?
Well, everybody starts out as a private, and when I was discharged, I was a Specialist 5 or Spec 5, E5.
E5.
And the company clerk was an interesting position because you were the one person that knew everything that was going on in the company. Everything flowed through you, and that was kind of an interesting spot to be in. If anybody wanted to know anything, you go to the company clerk because he's the one that sits there in the CO's office, and all the information flows through there.
Knows all.
He knows all.
And that's how I recall. Tell me now, it's quite different. Of course, I spent 6 years in the guard myself, and it's quite a different manner of drilling or performing this duty than when I was in it. It was 1 weekend a month and 2 weeks in the summer, but I've heard you say that they drilled differently. Tell me about that.
Well, when I first started, it was every Monday night, and then one Sunday a month, and then every Monday night. There were no weekends, and then 2 weeks of camp in the summer, and usually we went either to Fort Lewis or Yakima Firing Range. And then towards the end of my 3-year time, that changed to a weekend a month.
And the 2 weeks in the
summer.
Were any of your classmates or friends in this guard unit with you locally?
It seemed like most of the people that were there, there was very few in my class that actually joined. There were some older fellows that had joined, but the members here were mostly all local, but usually a little older, not too many out of my own class. There was a few.
How long did you serve?
Well, I served about 3.5 years after my active guard time, and that completed my obligation, so I was actually discharged. That completed my active duty obligation, and I was discharged in 1960, about midway through 1967.
This was the discharge you typed up yourself.
Right. And that was a discharge from active guard duty, and then I had to complete the 8-year total obligation, being in standby reserve then, which at that time amounted to doing nothing, basically, unlike today. And it was interesting that when I was on active duty, one of the training seminars I went to, they showed us a film of a place far, far away that nobody had ever heard of before. It was called Vietnam. And we watched guerrilla activities on this training film, and were told that there was a few military people there, just very few, and it was just a place kind of on the other side of the world, and nobody paid a lot of attention to it. And of course, Vietnam was just coming to life when I was discharged. I was in 66, 67. But, you know, it's an interesting perspective. I think about that quite a bit, you know, how they presented that to us in 1963.
Like it was not a big deal.
Not a big deal, and just, you know, this is something just to sit down and watch a film about and see maybe what a few military advisors are doing. But there was no hype about it at all. Just nothing.
Now, you say that when you first began that the meetings of the guard unit were on Monday night. About what time frame?
I think we drilled from 7 to 9 or 9:30.
And you also mentioned that at that time the rules were different about concerning employers
Well, they were. Then, unlike now, the employers didn't have to, they were not legally obligated to show any consideration to a guard member. They could, your 2 weeks active duty in the summer typically was your vacation time from your employer. So, and very typically then, if you worked for, you know, just one of the average employer downtown LeGrand, not being any type of government employment, or if one of the mills, you typically had 2 weeks vacation. And so most of them, including where I worked at Globe Furniture, that was your 2 weeks drill, was your 2 weeks vacation. And then they had no obligation to hold jobs or preserve your employment or whatever in respect to that.
Do you know of any employers who did, who were very cooperative with theirs? Or did everybody basically have to use their vacation? It sounds like most of them.
Most of them had to use their vacation. Yeah, that was really common. I worked. There was a couple of fellows at Globe Furniture where I spent my summers working that were in the guards prior to me being in the guards, and they were full-time employees, and that's how they spent their vacation in the summer. It was 2 weeks on active guard duty.
So if they wanted to take a real vacation, then they would have to take a leave without pay situation?
More or less, yeah.
Let's move on to college. After LeGrand High School, you did go to college where? And tell us about that.
Well, I started school when I got back from active guard duty at Fort Ord. That was in February of 64. It was interesting. As soon as I got back, I can remember that was a time in 1964, there was a flood in LeGrand. It was probably the worst time that we'd had with high water. The Grand Ronde River flooded on the freeway, and there was floods on the north side of town. The flood came from the Grand Ronde River and got out of its banks, and it's been changed a lot since then, rechanneled and banks build up. But at that time, we had a lot of really heavy low snowpack. Then it turned off and started to rain and caused the river to overflow its banks. And then it also caused the groundwater to come up. And when I got back from guards, I hadn't been back more than just a couple of weeks, and they activated the guard unit here to deal with the help of the floods. And we did lots of sandbagging, and mostly that's what we did. But the old underpass, historically known as Old Leaky, filled completely full of water. That's the underpass from Adams out to the Island City Strip. It's full to the top of water, and that was an old stream bed through there. And it always leaked when the groundwater got high, but this time it filled to the top. And Globe Furniture was a block down the street, and it was kind of an old riverbed through that part of town, and we had lots of water in that basement. There was probably a foot of water in that basement all over. And I remember my father lived down there for a week or so at nights just to keep the pumps going, to keep that basement pumped out. And they had a lot of furniture damage. It was all retail display area.
How long did you spend on duty then with the guard unit to help with that?
Well, we were probably not a long time, maybe 2 weeks during that high water till it started to recede. So we sandbagged all over town. There was lots of high water on the north side of town. A lot of homes had water in them or around them. And, south side, it wasn't too bad. Some of the small streams down the south side of town that flood periodically had some high water, but most of it was on the north side of town and around the river. The underpass was full of water for, gosh, it was probably a month or more before it receded.
I guess I should ask more about that before we move back to college here. Were you called out at any other time because the National Guard does serve local disasters?
They do. No, that was the only one. There were some fires after I was discharged from active duty that the Guard was called on. The Anthony Lakes fire being one of them. That was in, I wasn't in the Guards at that time.
But you were just called out once then?
Just the one time, yeah. And that was February of 64. Actually, the end of January. No, it was in February because I had just gotten back. And then I enrolled in college at Eastern for spring term of 64 and graduated in 69. Went for 5 years, graduated in spring, in a spring term 1969 with a Bachelor of Science degree in General Studies in Business. And that was the first graduating, quote, business class, not business administration like it is today. It was a business-oriented general studies program, and that was the first graduating class in that particular major. And the school didn't have a lot of business instructors. They had three or four business instructors and struggled for good quality people. Kind of an interesting time at the school in that particular field.
Was there any particular focus that you took in your studies in business?
Well, I took, at the time, with what was offered, I took everything, every business class that was offered, I took.
How about accounting?
And took all the accounting classes, probably focused on accounting more than anything because I was interested in it. They had a great accounting instructor by the name of Leonard Good, who had been at the school forever and retired from Eastern, and he was a great accounting instructor and offered really good classes. So that was an inspiration to do that. He was probably the best instructor and was ahead of the business department at that time.
Did you attend college on a scholarship or have any GI funding or anything
like
that? I didn't.
Unfortunately, being in the Guards, there was no GI Bill in the Guards. It was structured, the state funding program was structured not to include National Guard people because it was hard to meet the requirements. There was more active duty required than what most guard people would have, and so you didn't meet those requirements. But the good side of this, compared to today, I used to budget $500 a year for tuition and books to go to school. and tuition was $98 when I started.
That was my next question.
And books, you could buy books for the year for probably $100. I'll never forget my daughter, who graduated from Eastern in 2000. She was in her maybe sophomore or junior year, and she had one book that, at the time, I guess it's not unusual that we spent $189 for one book for her in one term, and that was only one book for one class.
And
I used
to
budget, and she was a nursing student, and I think it must have been a nursing book. But in comparison, I'd budget $100 for the year for books. And that, and you could, you know, some of the books in your lower division, you had sequence classes, and one book could get you through for the year, but you normally had to buy books every term of some sort.
Did you find that expensive at the time, however?
Not particularly, no. That didn't seem to be as expensive compared to today's costs of school. It seemed to be a smaller percentage of your budget.
And you said $98 for
tuition,
full-time tuition.
Full-time tuition, 15 credit hours, or no, 12 or more credit hours, right?
Did you receive any honors or awards during your academic career at Eastern?
Well, they let me graduate.
That's what I'm saying this term.
Yeah.
How about, I have a note
not
here.
Really. I was on the dean's list. I was on the dean's list.
On the dean's good list?
By then, it was the dean's good list as compared to my grade school experiences. I was on the dean's list in grade school also, but that was not the good list. But,
I understand.
But anyway, my grades were good in college, and I didn't graduate with any honors, but I was good enough to be on the dean's list.
How about activities, extracurricular academic activities? Were you involved in any sports, music, other things?
Well, not really. Our band, as I was going into college, the guys that I played with and the Tone Dusters were graduating, so our band kind of dissolved, and so I didn't have that through school, and I didn't follow through with any of the college bands or anything. I kept up my music just mostly for my own entertainment.
So pretty much you just stuck to academics.
I did.
Now you
academics
also
and a very strong social life.
Well, that's important, of course. A question I'm throwing in for my own benefit here. You told me that you had Miss Loso for a class or two. What classes did you have?
Well, I just had her for one, and it was a Western Civ class. And I was never really strong in literature, and as Mary Jo alluded to you, we weren't really prepared very well coming out of high school to deal with heavy-duty literature classes. And I took that class, I think I was a sophomore when I took that class, and I really struggled. I passed it, but it was a struggle.
She was a challenge.
She was a challenge. She gave you lots to do and lots to read, and I wasn't a very fast reader at the time. I comprehended really well, but I was really a slow reader, and so and this huge volume of books to read, and that's, and then along with everything else you had to do, all your other classes, it was really difficult, very time-consuming.
Tell me, you said that you were a third-generation graduate of Eastern Oregon? Or
no.
Your family now is three generations?
Well, Mary Jo's family is the one that has a history with Eastern. I graduated. Neither one of my parents, my father was did not attend anything beyond high school. My mother graduated from the St. Mary's Nursing Academy in Walla Walla. Never attended Eastern, but I graduated from Eastern. Mary Jo graduated from Eastern, and then both of our son and daughter both graduated in 2000 from Eastern. I'm a two generation.
You've
product.
Got two generations now from each one. Okay. Let's see. Yes, I have the note about your mother. What was your mother's name and your father's name?
Well, my father's name was John Lemon. Mother's was Margaret Lemon, Harmon being her maiden name. My father grew up in Midvale, Idaho, is where he's originally from.
And did your parents live out their lives over here, did you say?
They did, yeah. They moved here, like I said, in 47, and then they both deceased here.
Was your mother practicing as a nurse when she came here?
She was. She worked full-time in Walla Walla. When they moved here, she worked part-time, and then she was worked 20 years as Dr. Wesley Allen's office nurse. And Dr. Allen was a very well-known, popular general practitioner. He retired just a few years ago, sold his practice, and just recently, well, about a year ago, he moved from LeGrand, but she worked for him for 20 years full-time.
Next, we have notes here about working at Globe Furniture Store.
Well, from the time I was old enough to pick up one side of a dinette chair, I suppose, I worked there probably starting, I was maybe 10 years old, and I'd work just kind of off and on, and then when I was probably 12, I was working all, that was my part-time summer job, or full-time summer job. Part-time during the school year, just kind of as they needed me, and I didn't work a steady part-time during the school year, but worked a lot of Saturdays, if they were busy. But every summer I'd work there full-time.
I do have a note from about June of 69. It says here you worked for about a year.
Well, I did in 69 when I graduated from college. I was offered a job there on a full-time basis, year-round, with the idea of that being a career in the store there. And so when I graduated in that summer, I worked full-time from that point on. And then in 1972, my father's partner, Averett Hickox, and Averett was well into his 70s, and he was a very young 70s.
So we're continuing to talk about Globe Furniture Store now.
Yeah. We on?
Yeah.
Oh. Anyway, I'm beginning work there after college, after graduation. Full-time with the idea of that to lead into a career there. My father's partner, who was in his 70s, was wanting to retire, and so the way that developed, his retirement ended up being selling his half interest in the store to another man from out of town, and his last name was Basso, and they moved here from Hoquiam, Washington. He had a furniture store there and had sold it and was looking for another store to get into. So Averett sold his interest being half to Basso, and that was in 72, and then Dad continued on there until early 73, and then he came to me one day and told me that he had agreed to sell his interest to Basso in June of that year. And so the handwriting on the wall for me was basically not much of a career there, so I began looking for something else to do, and Dad left in June of 73, and I knew that Mary Jo and I made the decision we'd like to stay in LeGrand. She had a teaching contract in Union at the time, and was committed there for the school year, and we decided that we'd like to stay in LeGrand, and if we had a family someday, it was a good place to raise a family, and of course it was home for us, And so I set about trying to find something else to do for a work career, and became interested in the real estate profession, and decided that I'd pursue that until something else came along, and or I could find something else. So in November of 73, I went down to Portland to the Real Estate School of Oregon, and went to school there for a few weeks to prepare to pass the state exam, which was given in Salem. And so I went in November, took the exam at the end of November, and passed it, and then came back, worked through the Christmas holiday at the store, and then January 1 of 74, became employed with Lester Real Estate.
Okay, before we go to that, let's see, I have a question about that Globe Furniture Store. Was your father offered the opportunity to buy that other half of the business, or was there a reason why perhaps he didn't pick it up himself?
Well, I think he wanted to buy it, and reasons were financial, but he didn't. And so it appeared to him that the best thing to do at the time, and with Averett wanting to leave, was to let it go the way it did.
Okay.
And then his partnership with Basso was not as successful a partnership as him and Averett had been in the years past, and so Dad thought it would be better for, I think, the success of the store and all the relationships considered, that he just sell his part, and that was a way for him to kind of semi-retire also. And he was early retirement, he was only 55 at the time, but it provided him with a means of retirement.
Now, you said that one of your jobs, I know there were probably one job title covered numerous things that you did in the store. What sort of tasks and jobs did you have at the store?
Well, when I started out with my five-year general studies business degree in hand, I started out delivering furniture, and did that for a year or so, and then I worked my way into sales, being a salesman and managing the appliance department in the store, and also the electronics department. But I was, you know, basically in sales, did a lot of custom drapery work, managed that department for the last year I was there.
I think you mentioned floor covering.
Worked, did a lot of floor covering business.